It's June 26th, 2003. This is Andy Mushin seated with, do you go by Barbara Lorman?
I do.
Barbara Lorman in her Fort Atkinson home. Barbara served in the Wisconsin legislature, and let's start with that. What years did you serve and what roles did you have?
Yes. I was elected to the state senate, and this is the 13th state senate district, mm-hmm. in 1980 in a special election, which was the result of a resignation. So I served 2 years, the last 2 years of a four-year term, and then was reelected in 82, and then served until 1994 when I was defeated in a Republican primary.
I see.
So 14 years.
14 years. And what committees did you serve on, and what really were your issues in the legislature?
All of that time I served on what was called the Health and Human Services Committee, which generally deals, and it probably has a different name now, but generally deals with social issues related to health care, the elderly, handicapped people, that sort of thing. And I always served on the education committees also, and then a lot of other committees and commissions, and too numerous to mention, but I can give you those.
Okay. Yeah. And what are the accomplishments you're proudest of from those years?
Well, I just hate when someone asks me that question. Because I have to give it some thought.
Sure.
Obviously, when you're there that long, you author a number of bills, mm-hmm. and you vote on a number of bills. So people take credit for bills they voted on, even if they didn't author them.
Sure.
But one of the things that I actually did author and became law was a program for incarcerated women who give birth or have babies during their prison term, to provide a way for them to be part of their babies' lives, mm-hmm. and raise their children. And that actually became law. And another one that did become law was to allow the courts to impound the vehicle of a drunk driver, although they seldom do it. They now have the authority. A lot of people say, why don't you take away their car? And there was no real provision for that, mm-hmm. and so I authored a bill to do that. A lot of education issues. Actually, one for immigrants. I have some immigrant relatives who came from Kiev during Gorbachev's reign and came to Milwaukee and wanted to go to school and really couldn't afford it. You know, they had no money, and I was helping them. And in order to go to the university and be a state resident, you have to live here for a while, a year. And she was just ready to go to school, and they weren't going anywhere else. And we changed the law to allow people who come as immigrants, who are legal immigrants. Mm-hmm. There's another issue about illegal immigrants.
Right.
You've heard about that. This is people who are legal immigrants and who have a residency in our state, to allow them to go to any of the state institutions and pay in-state tuition, which, mm-hmm. is a significant dollar amount for them. So that's another smaller item, perhaps. Mm-hmm.
But important, certainly.
Well, important to those people who, uh-huh. who need it.
Right.
Sure, sure.
Now, was Mordecai Lee in the Senate when you were there?
He was there when I got there.
Uh-huh.
But then he retired during that time. I'm not sure what year he left, so, mm-hmm. I did serve with him for a while.
Okay. I'm just curious, any other Jewish legislators?
Sure, Russell Feingold.
Oh, yeah.
There was a woman from Milwaukee who was in the assembly, and it was named...
Oh, Peggy Rosenzweig?
Peggy Rosenzweig, but before her.
Oh.
I'd have to go back in a blue book. I got them all up there.
All right.
And tell you who that was. I didn't know her well. Let's see, anybody else besides Peggy?
Anybody from up north, or...
No, not that I can think of.
Okay.
Not that I can think of.
There wasn't any sort of Jewish caucus,
per
se,
no.
Was there?
No.
Well, you as a Republican and Feingold and Mordecai as Democrats, did you clash ever on issues?
Oh, Lynn Edelman.
Oh, Lynn Edelman.
Jewish,
right.
He was there.
Right.
I actually worked with Russell on a bill. You know, people think you're just such big enemies all the time, and you really aren't, except during campaign season. And then, of course, you try to make clear differences. Mm-hmm. But most legislation, if you look at the votes, are passed by members of both parties. And most legislation is not particularly partisan. Most of it is really not. And other than the budget, of mm-hmm. course, which is totally partisan, most legislation is authored and voted on by members of both parties.
I see.
And matter of fact, Russell and I authored a bill together that dealt with a program for the elderly. It was a study for Alzheimer's and relating to, we did another one on insurance, long-term care insurance, to improve the ability to buy long-term care insurance, which most people don't buy. It was just priced too high.
Mm-hmm.
I never really worked with Lynn Edelman on anything. Chris Peggy is a Republican. We did things together.
Mm-hmm.
But not too much. You know, it's mm-hmm. just basically the issue more than the person.
Now, was the hate crimes law debated while you were in, while you were serving, or was that after you left? I don't remember the dates of that.
Yeah, that was while I was still there.
Because in general, the Jewish community was behind it. Lynn Edelman, I probably was opposed to it.
I was opposed to it also.
You were too.
Mm-hmm.
Why, if I may ask?
I think Jewish people normally would be opposed to it. I don't know that the Jewish community was much behind it too much. First of all, there's all kinds of ways to go after people. All kinds of ways.
Mm-hmm.
Statutes are full of ways to prosecute people for crimes they commit. To prove a crime was totally hatred. I mean, you know, you and I can have strong emotions about things. I could hate you sitting here. Maybe I hate your haircut. I don't know. And I found that really, really difficult to prosecute somebody for. I mean, you can prosecute people for vandalism. You can prosecute them for striking you, for assaulting you, for battering you, for vandalizing your house, for throwing paint against, for writing a swastika on your synagogue, if that's the issue.
But
so to have a specific crime, it's like a reverse discrimination.
Right, it's prosecuting people for their thought, in a sense,
yes,
that's associated with the crime. I think that's what Lynn Edelman has argued, too.
Yes, and I really worry about things like that. It sounds good on its face, but mm-hmm. there's that whole business of big brotherism and controlling the way you think and behave. It's like flag burning.
Mm-hmm.
I do not oppose flag burning. My husband, who you met, who's a military veteran, and served two tours of duty in Vietnam, including winning a Silver Star and a Bronze Star, does not oppose flag burning. You won't find anybody more patriotic than him. And he understands mm-hmm. it. That's why he understands it, that flag burning is a protest.
Mm-hmm.
And if it was the Nazi flag, you'd think it was fine.
I see. I understand.
Okay. So it's those kinds of things, and mm-hmm. I think Jews normally oppose those kinds of legislation.
Although,
they see it as a threat.
Right. I recall the Milwaukee Jewish Council for Community Relations was supportive of hate crime. So I asked, just wondering if the Jewish community mm-hmm. or some of the organized Jewish community ever put pressure on you then for that.
I might have had some letters. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I don't remember how I voted. Probably voted against it, but okay. I don't really remember.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, before you served in the legislature, your late husband, Milton, served in
the legislature.
And what,
he did.
What? Tell me about his career. What years? And
he served in the assembly for uh-huh. 3 years, actually a term and a half. He was really in business here with his father in the scrap business. This sitting representative, Byron Wackett from Watertown, decided to retire. He'd served a long time. He'd been there for 20 years or something, and mm-hmm. he decided it was time to quit. And so Milt was recruited by some acquaintances when they realized there was going to be a vacancy and an opportunity. It's a lot easier to get elected when there's no incumbent.
Mm-hmm.
And So they came and talked to him, and he kind of hemmed and hawed. He didn't know if he was a Democrat or a Republican. And anyway, he decided he would run as a Republican, which he did, and he was elected. And halfway through his, and then he ran a second time, and halfway through his second 2-year term, he died unexpectedly. A lot of people thought that I succeeded him.
Mm-hmm.
I did not. We don't have that kind of a system in Wisconsin. Anyway, you have to run for election. The governor calls a special election. There was a special election called then, and another person won that seat from Fort Atkinson, actually, a fellow who I'm still friendly with. And then a year after that, this Senate seat opened up. Peter Bear, a Jewish guy from
Madison.
That's
right. I know Peter.
He's in all kinds of trouble. He'd created for himself. He finally decided he should get out of town, and did. And he wrote a letter from where he had escaped to, I think, Jamaica, saying that he was resigning. And so this vacancy then was created. And truly, I had no political experience. I was basically a homemaker, but in that interim, Milta died, and I was getting involved in our family business. And I had had some political experience through his experience, just by being married to him and hearing his stories and meeting some of the people he knew and going to things with him and that sort of thing. And these very same friends came and talked to me about running, and I had a very distorted view of the whole thing. I thought they were asking me as a courtesy because of him.
Hmm.
It was very weird. It makes no sense at all. But I thought that, and then I thought, well, somebody needs to run. You certainly don't want a seat to run, you know, to let anyone else just walk away with it without a candidate. It doesn't happen nowadays. Everybody's running for everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, too, it's a time in my life. It'll be a good experience. I'll learn a few things, and then I'll go back to doing what I need to do, which is learning about the scrap business. So I certainly didn't think I would get elected. I mean, not at all. And there was a big Democrat primary, and they pretty much beat each other up. And I didn't have a primary.
Mm-hmm.
So after their primary was over, we had the general election, and I won. Much to my dismay.
And then you kept winning.
Yeah, and then I ran again after that.
Uh-huh. Why did Milton choose the Republican Party?
Well, I think he sat down and did a little bit of research on both political parties and what they stood for.
Mm-hmm.
He recognized that the Republican Party, at least in its basic elements, and probably not what you see today so much, really reflected more what he believed, which is limited government control, mm-hmm. limited government spending, encouraging people to be self-sufficient and independent, supporting economic development, those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. Were you a Republican at that time?
I would have to say I wasn't. My father-in-law was a fierce Republican. It's interesting to watch people evolve when they get into business. You know, one of the reasons people like Herb Kohl is because he's been in business. And they see him not as a flaming liberal, but as a more level-headed moderate.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And that's why a lot of Republicans vote for him. You know, most Republicans are not interested in the social issues.
Right.
They're not interested in abortion and flag burning and these fringe issues that get people excited.
Mm-hmm.
They're really interested in the economy. They're interested in promoting the economy. They're interested in seeing people succeed on their own, getting a decent education, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's the mainstream Republicans. They always were. They still are today.
Mm-hmm. So when Milton threw in his hat as a Republican, he had a fairly easy time of it getting elected.
He certainly he won with a good margin. Mm-hmm. He was opposed. He was opposed in both of his races, but he certainly won with good margins, and he worked hard. He campaigned hard. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what an the only time it's easy is if you run unopposed. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you've got to do it all, whether you think you're going to have it easier or not. Uh-huh. You can't take a chance, and you've got to do the doors and do the mailings and make the phone mm-hmm. calls, buy the ads, the whole thing.
Now, the people who came to Milton must have seen him as a pretty prominent person in the community.
Sure they did. He was.
Uh-huh.
He was. He was very active in the community, mm-hmm. served in a lot of ways. He was active in the Lions Club and Red Cross and different kinds of boards and things. He was active in our temple in Madison, which had nothing to do with
right.
anything here, really.
Which temple is that?
Bethel.
Bethel, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, he was very active.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, he had been a leading businessman in town.
He was in business. He mm-hmm. was active with the, I don't know if he was active with the Chamber of Commerce. He may have been. Yeah, he was identified as an outstanding young businessman, mm-hmm. and he was growing the company, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How old was he when he died?
52, I think.
Oh, boy. Very young.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm interested in the business. It's the scrap business.
And, yes.
Are you still involved in it? Or
no, it was sold.
It was sold. What was it called?
Lorman Iron and Metal
Lorman
Company.
Lorman Iron and Metal. And where was it located?
It's still here in town,
uh-huh.
On the north side, same location. It's still there.
Mm-hmm.
My father-in-law had a little junkyard behind his house, right downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it might have been about 1940 or so. He wanted to move it out of downtown, basically Main Street. And this land on the edge of town was available, and it was swampy, underwater type land.
Mm-hmm.
And so the city said that he could have, they would sell him that land if he would fill it in. You know, now you it wouldn't be allowed to.
Mm-hmm.
But then it was a desirable thing because it appeared to be wasteland and good for nothing. So the deal was he could buy the land with the understanding that he would fill it in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was 9 acres, and it wasn't all underwater, mm-hmm. but a lot of it was. So he bought that land, and he didn't need 9 acres. I mean, he was just in his own backyard at the time.
Uh-huh.
And built a little building and started a scrap business, bought a small crane, a unit crane, I still can picture it. And a truck or two, and uh-huh. he had a couple people working for him, and he moved to the north side of town.
Moved his business and his house? Or?
No, not the house.
Okay.
The business.
So, but he cleaned out his backyard.
Right.
Yeah. So this was Lewis Lorman.
Lewis.
Uh-huh. And is that what he had done exclusively in Fort Atkinson? He ran sort of a small scrap business?
Pretty much. Before mm-hmm. that, he tried a few things. I think he sold chickens. He peddled. Well, I think he started the scrap business by basically going farm to farm with a horse and wagon.
Mm-hmm.
It was sort of typical in those days to do that. And then he needed a place to pile up his goods, so mm-hmm. it turned into his backyard. And there was a building back there, and foundry here in town, which is what really made it possible. He served the local industries.
Mm-hmm.
There were a couple foundries. There are none here now.
I
but
see.
There were, I think, two foundries mm-hmm. right here in town. So mostly farm scrap and then sorting it out and then selling it to the foundries.
Mm-hmm. And so he raised a family.
Well, he had one child.
Oh,
that's
okay.
He had another child in Kiev. He was married previously before coming to the United States, and that wife and he were divorced. He went to the courthouse here in Jefferson County and was divorced, and she stayed in Kiev and with her child, and she remarried also.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she had another she might have had another child with her second husband. And that half-brother, would be Milt's half-brother, grew up there in Kiev. He was in the Navy during World War II. And my father-in-law didn't communicate with them. I think he tried prior to the war.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the war, you know, all those years went by, and somewhere in the early, late 50s, I don't remember what year, I can't tell you now, maybe early 60s, something like that, we got a letter from a woman who turned out to be Louis Lorman's ex-sister-in-law, the sister of the woman he had divorced.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it came to us, out at our house, saying, would you be interested in learning about your family in Russia? We didn't know whether it was...
Or were they looking for money? Or,
right, who's looking for what, or is this legit? And at that time, his dad and mother were in Florida for like a three-month winter break. So we called and asked if he knew about this woman and what this was all about. And he said, oh yeah, that's my ex-sister-in-law. So it was true. So of course then we were interested because there's this family we didn't know about in Kiev, and began a correspondence with them. And that was under the communists, so it was really difficult. But you could send packages through an agency in Chicago. But it was the only way you could send them anything. So we started doing that, shopping and then going down to Chicago and sending them packages once or maybe twice a year. It was very hard to do and very, very expensive. You had to prepay for everything.
I see.
But if you prepaid it all here in the duty and everything else, they would get it. We were afraid it would never be delivered, but it was delivered. They did get it. And so we had this nice ongoing relationship then with his half-brother, who, of course, we didn't even know about. We knew he'd had a child, and he had a picture of him as a little boy that his ex-wife had sent him, but then nothing after that. So it was kind of neat.
So how
they're in Milwaukee, by the way.
I
brought them.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, they're all in Milwaukee.
What's the name?
Well, some of them are now Lormans. They changed their name back to Lorman because they liked that idea. And Leova died the same year as Milton did, in 1979, strangely.
That was the first wife? Or
The half-brother. The child. He died that year also. He was quite a bit older than Milton, like 13 years older or something. But anyway, and it was after he died that they contacted me to say they thought that they could leave if they could have help. They needed a sponsor and some financial support in order to do that. And I said, of course, I'll do what I can. I don't know what it is I'm supposed to do. That was a learning experience. And we got them here, right here at 2 Fort Atkinson. Never forget that day. We went to the airport in Milwaukee and watched them walk off the plane.
When was this? What year?
At least, I don't know, I'd have to look back and think about that. It's probably 15 years ago now, when was Gorbachev in office?
Yeah, he was deposed in, what, about 89 or 90?
So it was along in there, a couple of years before Gorbachev left.
So you brought 89. This family.
I did.
To Milwaukee, and then you brought them to Fort Atkinson.
Well, I brought them to Fort Atkinson just for a couple of weeks for them. They said they can't even remember it. It was just so everything, they were just so in shock all the time. It was so difficult for them leaving. First they had to go to Rome, and then they were there for 3 months.
Well, I remember that kind of process.
Yeah, and they had no money. You know, they didn't, they had been so shut off from the world they didn't know what to bring, so they brought everything they could carry. You know, they thought they needed household goods. They were carrying pots and pans, you know, stuff that mm-hmm. they had no idea that here we throw it away. You mm-hmm. know, they could.
So they stayed here in your house?
They stayed here for a couple of weeks. And at that time, the Milwaukee Jewish community was not set up for Russian immigrants like they are now. They hadn't had hardly any. Mm-hmm. And Madison hadn't had hardly any. And I wanted them to go to Madison. It's closer for me.
Mm-hmm.
Not here. I felt they wouldn't be happy here. The language barrier and the culture shock, that they'd be happier in a community where there'd be other Russians and some mm-hmm. social services for them through the Jewish community. And Madison just said, we're not set up for anything like this. You really should talk to people in Milwaukee. In Milwaukee had a couple people, but they had very little experience also.
Mm-hmm.
And but were helpful and tried hard. And found him an apartment. Is it Royal Taxman? One of the taxmans has had a building right on Farwell
mm-hmm.
with some small apartments, and got us an apartment. And we collected furniture and, you know, that whole story, and got them settled then in this little apartment. Got them hooked up with a technical college so they could start learning English.
Mm-hmm.
And Jewish community supported them with a little bit of a monthly stipend while they were getting English, and they got jobs. Yeah, and since then, the entire family, there was also a brother, younger brother, and he and his mm-hmm. wife came, and they each have one child, married child, and they came also. The daughter mm-hmm. wasn't married at the time. She's the one we changed the law for. And I learned about it, so she uh-huh. could go to UWM, which she did.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the in-state tuition.
The in-state tuition yeah. issue. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. she has a very good job with Strong.
Very nice.
She's a computer programmer, is married, mm-hmm. has a little girl, married another Russian immigrant.
Mm-hmm.
The son had a wife that he brought along. They have a little girl. He went to MIAD. He became an industrial designer.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a job with Braco in near Philadelphia, I think there. They're near Philadelphia, and the other mm-hmm. ones are in Milwaukee, and everyone's holding their own.
That's great.
Yeah.
Is that interesting? And that they actually came through Fort Atkinson before Milwaukee.
Yeah.
How did Louis Lorman meet his second wife? Where was she from?
She was from Chicago,
uh-huh.
and he went there looking for a wife,
uh-huh.
and somebody introduced him, I don't know who, and she was an immigrant, didn't really speak English, hadn't been there very long, and I think he thought the fact that she was an immigrant was good for him, because he wouldn't have to deal with somebody with too many American ideas, uh-huh. you know.
So what did she think of Fort Atkinson? Not everybody likes small towns.
No, I don't think she liked it very much, but she stayed.
Mm-hmm.
I think they had a rocky marriage, and I think she left a couple of times and went to Chicago and stayed with her relatives, took Milton with her, put him in school there, came back here. So it was rocky. Mm-hmm. It was hard on her and hard on him.
What was her name?
Clara.
Clara.
Wallach.
Clara Wallach.
She has cousins in Milwaukee
uh-huh.
named Wallach.
Mm-hmm. So Milton kind of bounced back and forth between Fort Atkinson and Chicago as a
little bit.
Boy.
Mostly know, here. But
mostly was here.
But uh-huh. they did go there a lot. And his dad put him to work when he was quite small, working in the scrapyard. Mm-hmm.
Did they have any kind of a Jewish home life? I mean, were they?
They did. His dad was concerned about that. It's interesting, his dad was not a religious man, but he believed in a religious education.
Mm-hmm. So how'd he do it?
He hired the son of an Orthodox rabbi to come and live in their house one summer and educate his child.
How old was Milton?
He was of bar mitzvah age.
Oh,
he had a bar mitzvah.
So he was taught for his bar mitzvah.
Yeah.
Got it. And where did he have his bar mitzvah?
I think in Milwaukee.
Uh-huh.
I believe it was Milwaukee.
Okay. Yeah. And so it's hard to imagine an Orthodox rabbi's son coming to live in Fort Atkinson.
I mean, I think he was Orthodox. He must have been. Uh-huh. He had to have been.
So did Lewis Lorman and his wife keep kosher?
No. Mm-hmm. She bought kosher meat for a while. They would send it out on the train. There used to be a train. Like most small towns were built on a railroad.
Sure.
And so the train would drop the meat off on the railroad dock with all the other stuff they were dropping off, where it sat in the hot sun in the summertime for a while until you came down and got it. And I think after a while they realized that was not a good thing and just gave it up.
Did they celebrate holidays?
Oh, yes. A little bit. Uh-huh. Yeah. They did. They would go to their relatives, either in Milwaukee or Chicago, for holidays, high holy days, whatever. Go to temple there, probably more in Milwaukee than Chicago. She had a big family in Chicago. She was one of eight children. They all didn't come to this country. They were also from Kiev, and we visited them. But I think most of their holiday celebrations were really in Milwaukee with their Milwaukee relatives.
How about Passover? Did they ever have seders at their house here in Fort Atkinson?
I think they went to their relatives for things like that.
For that, too.
Maybe when he was small. Not in my experience. In my experience, she didn't do much of anything like that. If she ever did entertain when they were younger, and I think she did, she didn't do it when they were older.
Were there other Jewish families in town? You were mentioning a family that owned a pickle factory.
Well, that was Louis' relatives. And they left. They went to Chicago.
And these were the Weinbergs.
The Weinbergs.
Yeah.
They moved to Chicago. They were concerned for their children's Jewishness, to make sure that they would go to a city where they could meet Jewish spouses.
So the Weinbergs were here before Lewis got here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and they had their factory. And when did they leave, do you think?
It must have been in the 30s.
In the 30s, okay. Do you remember any first names offhand, or we can check, we can talk about it later, too?
Well, a couple of them used to come back for their high school class reunion. From Chicago. But I can't remember the name. I'm sorry.
Okay, but they attended Fort Atkinson.
Graduated from high school here.
Okay. Other Jewish families?
Yep, there was a Mazur family.
M-A-Z-U-R?
I think it was M-A-Z-O-R.
Okay.
They had a furniture store. And she was, I think, from Milwaukee. Their daughter, they have two daughters, and one of them for sure is in Madison. Her name is Lorna Kanaz.
Kanaz. Oh, sure.
Yeah. So you know that name.
I do. Okay. Mazur. And the furniture store was probably called Mazur's Furniture Store?
Right. It was.
And what was Mr. Mazur's name?
Martin.
Okay.
Nice guy. Nice guy. And he's very community-minded.
So he belonged to civic groups. And
sure,
kind of
Masonic Lodge. They all did. It was very popular years ago. It isn't really now, but it was very popular.
Okay.
There was another one called the Knights of Pythias, and my in-laws were active with that, both of them. There was something called the Pythian Sisters, and something else called the Service Star League, which I think was for people. Was that connected maybe to the American Legion? She was active, my mother-in-law was active with that, the Service Star League, Eastern Star, and some women's organizations. Her name was Clara. I don't know if I told you that.
Yeah.
Wallach.
Clara Wallach, okay.
Yeah.
So the Mazurs were here. Do you know how long they were in town? Or?
Well, through their girls' childhoods, they sent their daughters to Milwaukee Downer to high school. There used to be a private high school in Milwaukee. And I believe both the daughters went there. I don't think they graduated from high school here.
So there's Lorna, and do you recall the other name?
No. Okay. If I heard it, I'd probably say so.
Well, I'll look for Lorna.
Yeah.
Other Jewish families, the Zemels were here.
The Zemels were here.
And I forget what they did.
They had an egg processing business. Oh, yeah. Egg packaging.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's been other families in and out from time to time. And there's maybe families here now. You see, UW-Whitewater attracts people to the faculty, and sometimes they like to live in Fort Atkinson.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's been Jewish people around, and there's been Jewish students. They used to have a Jewish student organization. They'd call us, and we'd go over there for the holidays. And
is that UW-Whitewater?
Mm-hmm. Whether there is now, I have no idea.
What years do you recall they had the Jewish student organization? So when Milton was alive?
Or? Oh, yes.
Okay.
Probably 60s and 70s.
Okay. Well, then in your household with Milton, well, again, it's not easy to live a Jewish life in a small community. You drove a lot to Madison for religious school and that kind of thing?
We belonged to Bethel Temple, which I had belonged to with my parents as a child, where I was confirmed, and took them there for confirmation for bar mitzvah. Both of my sons were bar mitzvahed. Daughter was confirmed. We were married there.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, sometimes they were going there 3 times a week because they would be in different classes on different days.
How long a drive is it from here? Probably have it memorized.
Yeah, it would take almost an hour, close to an hour.
One way.
And so drop the kids off, go visit my mother, maybe do a little shopping, go back, pick them up, get them some hamburgers at a fast food thing on the way home usually, and get home about 1 o'clock, 1:30 every Sunday. Sometimes every Saturday and Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. It was tough on them.
I was going to ask if they must have complained because
they did. They were rebellious. It was tough on them.
But you got them educated Jewishly.
They had a Jewish education. Mm-hmm. They had some Jewish friends. They did Jewish things. They went to camp.
Which camp? The Jewish camp?
Union Institute in Oconomowoc in the summer. My two sons spent a summer in Israel.
What are your children's names?
Carol, Bill, and David.
Okay. So your sons were in Israel, you said? Or
they did. They did. They went on a summer program, stayed on a kibbutz. My daughter is married to a rabbi. They live in Toledo. One son is married to a Muslim, and the other one is married to a person who she's not Jewish, but doesn't practice any religion.
I see.
So it's kind of an interesting mishmash.
Interesting blend.
Yeah.
And you put on a lot of miles going back and forth to Madison doing that.
Sure.
And that's where, obviously, you would go to services. For holidays and that sort of thing. And it sounds like for Shabbat too sometimes.
Oh, lots of times.
Yeah. Okay.
Lots of times.
Uh-huh. Did other Jewish families carpool with you?
When the Zemels were raising their kids, we carpooled quite a bit, and that helped.
Oh, sure. What did you think about the idea of your children staying in Fort Atkinson? Did you tell them, go find someplace else to live, or would did that issue come up?
No. Mm-hmm. It was their choice. I mean, once they went off to college, they didn't want to come back here. They had nothing that really drew them back here. My daughter went to the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and then she went to graduate school in Denver. And then she came home and sent out some resumes and ended up getting a job at Hebrew Union Institute in Cincinnati as working in the library, which is how she met her husband and why she's married to a rabbi.
I see. What's his name, by the way?
His name is Sam Weinstein.
And he's in Toledo.
Toledo, yeah.
Okay.
And my second son went to school at Whitewater, and then he didn't finish there, and then he worked here and there, had different kinds of jobs, and ended up graduating from UW-Madison, ultimately, and was living in Madison and working there when he met the woman who he eventually married.
Mm-hmm.
Sailboarding.
Oh.
Things he likes to do. So mm-hmm. He's kind of an outdoors guy.
I see.
He likes to canoe and bicycle. And, mm-hmm.
and there's a lot of opportunity for that in Madison.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Sure.
All right.
And then the third one went to Carroll College.
Mm-hmm.
He went to Wayland Academy in Beaver Dam for his last 2 years of high school. I think two or three, I can't remember now. And then from there he went to Carroll College. And then he moved to Milwaukee, where he actually tried to be active in the Jewish community. He joined the Jewish Singles Club, and did, but it wasn't right for him. He was too young for that.
Uh-huh.
Jewish singles are people mostly in their 30s, you know, they're either divorced or, and he was just in his 20s.
Right.
And he went, and the women liked him, you know,
Of
course, tall, good-looking guy, but they weren't for him, he was too young.
Uh-huh.
And so he started hooking up with other people that he met, and ended up with kind of a mixed group, but mostly non-Jews.
Mm-hmm.
And then met a woman who, she's a doctor in Milwaukee. She was doing a residency and with a group of friends, some Jewish. Matter of fact, one of their friends is a Jewish guy who is married to a woman of Chinese heritage who converted to Judaism.
Interesting group of people.
Yeah, very interesting group of people.
Did any of them ever work in the family business during the summer? Or
sure, they did, especially the older son did, uh-huh. quite a bit, worked in the yard.
And so that's just, what, taking things apart, moving things around? I actually don't know what happens.
In a scrapyard? Well, they're all different, but in an industrial scrapyard, you're buying scrap from a producer of it, which is a manufacturer, usually. If you can picture, say, well, when this microphone is made,
mm-hmm.
this base here is metal.
Yes.
And this piece is cast.
Mm-hmm.
So the metal has to come from somewhere, and it's iron.
Mm-hmm.
So this is probably made from, it could be made from scrap iron. So it could be cut off ends from another piece that was manufactured, and then cut to a certain size, and then sorted by size, and material, what kind of iron it is, and then resold to somebody else who has need of it. So it's a commodities business.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually kind of like trading. It's like trading wheat.
Mm-hmm. And you ran the business for a number of years, you were saying?
Not really.
Oh.
When Milt died, I began to go there on a daily basis to learn about it. We had a plant manager and a mm-hmm. controller. And they pretty much ran it. But they were teaching me, so
mm-hmm.
I was learning things. And then when I went into the legislature, I really didn't want to run the scrap business. It just wasn't something I was wanting to do, and
mm-hmm.
I liked being in the legislature, and it provided a little bit of income besides. And my kids weren't coming back to it,
mm-hmm.
And so decided that we should look for a buyer and get out of it. And that's what happened.
I see. Now, in many of the smaller communities and even the larger places, Jews were in the scrap business. Did
mm-hmm.
you know Jews in other communities
sure.
in the business? Can you think
sure.
of anybody?
Sure. In Milwaukee, the Millers,
uh-huh.
for example, Miller Compressing,
uh-huh.
people in Madison, Manitowoc,
mm-hmm.
you know, all over the place, yes.
I see. And did you do business with one another, or how did you
Loeb's
know one another?
In Watertown bought the business.
Oh.
We actually didn't do a lot of business with the Loeb's.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know, they're kind of competitors.
I see.
But some.
But if you have, different specialties, you might buy metal from
right.
somebody or sell metal to somebody else.
Right. If we have something they need, for example,
uh-huh.
if they specialize in metals and we specialize in in ferrous, and they specialize in non-ferrous, you can sell to them because you're not going to want to handle a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
We handled a lot of aluminum. We handled waste paper. We actually built a plant in Janesville just for handling waste paper. The General Motors plant down there produced a lot of cardboard, a lot of packaging paper,
mm-hmm.
and we serviced General Motors, so we built a plant in Janesville,
mm-hmm.
really for
wow.
them.
Would sort of the old-time Jewish scrap dealers do business in Yiddish ever? I mean, was it that much of like an old boys club?
Might have been a little bit with my father-in-law in
uh-huh.
his early years.
Because I would think about my great-grandfather. I mean, he spoke Yiddish, and
yeah.
you know. And
but not really. Uh-huh. Not in my memory.
Okay.
So it got to be too professional. Mm. When he was running the business, you know, and started as a peddler, the business was open probably 6 days a week. Because on Saturdays, the farmers would bring in their scrap. They'd get out their old machinery, whatever they were cleaning up, especially in winter. So the big thing was you had to be open on weekends to accommodate the farmers.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of farm scrap. And then people would bring in other kinds of strange things that nowadays would never show up. We'd go to an antique shop. Because
huh.
they just wanted to get rid of it.
Uh-huh.
Like cast iron toys, which now would be valuable.
Right, but then it was everybody had cast iron.
Right,
toys.
They were just cleaning out a basement
uh-huh.
or an attic or a barn. You wouldn't see the scrap business like that at all now. I'm
mm-hmm.
pretty sure it's so specialized. For example, we never junked cars after the first few years. That just changed, and that became a specialty that we didn't deal with. You
mm-hmm.
had to be licensed, and you had to dispose of the fuel tanks properly and all this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
We never dealt with cars, for example.
So if someone came with a car, you just send them down the road?
Or? Yeah, they'd right. They'd go to an auto junk
mm-hmm.
dealer. So, yeah, not to us,
mm-hmm.
as an example. Yeah.
So doing business in town, I mean, there were only a few Jewish families. Was it comfortable? And is it comfortable now being Jewish in Fort Atkinson? I mean, some communities, frankly, have more anti-Semitism to deal with than others. And
sure. I think that there's always some anti-Semitism around. I don't have much experience with it, fortunately. When my kids were young and going to school, sometimes somebody would give them a hard time. I actually had a neighbor with a little boy the same age as my youngest child, and these two little boys played together a lot. And one day she told me that she was very glad of that opportunity because she'd been brought up to basically hate Jews and found out that we were just sort of like ordinary people, you know, kind of living like they were living.
Mm-hmm.
And she was glad that her son had the chance to become a friend of my son's. So I've kind of thought that if there was any kind of a mission at all for me being here in Fort Atkinson was to maybe be a really good Jew
mm-hmm.
and set a fine example of for myself and my children and for the community. And I think most people don't think about it very much. I think there are always some who did. People would be surprised to find out that I was Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
They knew Milton was.
Mm-hmm.
Primarily because he was born here, they knew his parents. His parents were old-fashioned. They spoke with an accent.
Mm-hmm.
And when they would find out that I was Jewish, they'd say, "Really? No kidding."
You don't look it. Did they say?
You don't look it. Are you sure?
Are you sure? Well,
as far as I know, yeah. So there's always was that, and there's there always will be. There's some of that. We had friends in Whitewater. There was a family, the Perrys, Leo Perry. His daughter is still there. Yeah, he had a raincoat factory. And it doesn't matter whom you marry, whether you convert to something else or not, you could be married in the Catholic Church and you're still the local Jew. there was another family here named Kaler, or Kohler. They had a daughter the age of my son, Julie, and her grandpa was Jewish. And he married a non-Jew, lived here. You're resurrecting all these memories now for me. And my father-in-law told the story about how his father came here and stood in front of the church and mourned for his son, who he figured he had died in his eyes, for marriage. There you go. A lot of stories like that around in these small towns.
Right. Well, there weren't a lot of Jews to marry unless you went off to the big city.
And so there was a lot of intermarriage and a lot of unhappy parents for it. And people who disowned their children for it. And there's some of that here. My kids had some problems growing up with anti-Semitism. People
they'd call them names?
Calling them names or push and shove a little bit. They really never brought a lot of it home. Mm-hmm. So they probably would tell a story that I don't tell because I don't really know their story. Mm-hmm. But unless you come from a really big city where you can live in a Jewish neighborhood, I think there's not a lot of difference. I mean, I grew up in Madison, and there were two Jewish kids in my high school. Hmm. I did not grow up in a Jewish community. Two mm-hmm. Jewish kids in my high school class. In my class. Mm-hmm. A couple in the class above me and a couple in the class below me.
But still, it's a handful of Jewish kids in a big building.
Right. I did not grow up in a Jewish community.
Uh-huh.
There's just not such a thing in a city that size. Most Jews probably live on the west side. They meet each other in temple or synagogue. Mm-hmm. But the kids do not go to school in a Jewish neighborhood.
Is there a country club here that didn't allow Jews? I mean, that's a story in a lot of communities.
Yeah, there was not here in Fort Atkinson that I know about. Mm-hmm. There is a golf club. We used to belong to it. I don't think that's ever been an issue. The Masonic Lodge, there was an issue. My father-in-law wanted to become the next level above a Mason, a Shriner.
Mm-hmm.
And the Madison Shrine would not accept him. They did not have Jews in that.
Wow.
So he ended up going to Milwaukee. Hi.
Still going on, huh?
Not much longer.
No, we're almost done.
I gotta throw this guy out pretty soon. So there were certainly things.
Mm-hmm.
So they ended up joining the Milwaukee Triple S Shrine because mm-hmm. they did accept Jews. My father wanted to be a Mason in Madison, and he could not get in, so he joined the Knights of Pythias.
Mm-hmm.
But, that's in the 30s and 40s. Mm-hmm. Anti-Semitism was a lot more overt than it is today.
That's right. In terms of doing business, I mean, your father-in-law and Milton apparently both did fine here. I mean, they might have faced issues.
Of course they faced issues.
I mean, anti-Semitic issues.
Yeah, from time to time.
Uh-huh.
But think about it in the bigger picture. I got elected to the state senate.
So, right, and he got elected before you.
And he got elected before me. And Russell uh-huh. Feingold got elected running statewide. Never mind, his election was a little strange.
Yeah.
Unusual. But Herb Kohl got elected running statewide. They've never tried to minimize their Jewishness.
And Jewishness was never an issue in the election, or
not. It really wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
Amazingly, I was.
Which is great.
I was kind of like, what will I do? I didn't know what I would do. How should I prepare myself? What shall I say back if somebody insults me?
Mm-hmm.
It never really happened. Other things happened, but it wasn't Jewishness.
Mm-hmm.
It was being a woman, maybe. Tend to your business, take care of your children, go home. That, a little bit of that, but not dirty Jew or I don't vote for Jews. Not really.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm sure there were people who felt that way, but it wasn't overt.
Right, and it obviously didn't hurt you in any significant way.
I don't think so.
You won a lot of elections.
There are some very conservative right-wing religious organizations in this area. I don't think they would have supported me in any event. I would have been too liberal.
Mm-hmm.
I would have been too liberal as a Christian or as a non-Jew, whatever I would be,
mm-hmm.
for them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else? I'm sorry.
No.
You've been very helpful, and this has been very interesting, and thank you so much.
You're welcome.